Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, bankers and lawyers and DEA agents to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'd also like to welcome the Australian Federal Police, the New Zealand Police, and also the various government agencies that might be surveilling and listen to the show right now. I'm sure that you'll probably learn something too, that you'll probably use against me and wind up raiding my house and taking my computers and stuff like that for evidence against other people and stuff like that we support on this network, who are very good people who don't deserve to be discriminated against by scum like you. There is a hell of a lot of bad stuff going on. I'll come to my guest in just a second. I just wanted to give a wee pedophilia. Yes, I know it's a dirty word because it implies a very dirty thing. My friend and confidant, Daniel Ryder, not last week, went public for the first time with me across the phone, and I put the video up. The video is called Proof SIFS is a Pedophile Ring. SIFS is about C-Y-F-S. It's a Child, Youth and Family Services in New Zealand. It's about a 45-minute long interview. 1 week after, and I think this only just happened yesterday, the New Zealand police raided his property and confiscated all his computer equipment. During the interview, he stated that he had a hell of a lot of evidence on that computer, especially recordings of pedophile scum in the Child, Youth and Family Services, admitting that they are pedophiles, admitting that they want that they sell children, admitting that they sell meth, and he gets raided. My other friend Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, the most recent issue was about pedophiles as well, and there was a complaint laid. His magazines get sold in supermarket chains here in New Zealand, and a complaint was laid because the front cover story was talking about the rise of pedophilia in the Western world, and somebody complained that he was discriminating against pedophiles. And all of those magazines got pulled off those supermarket shelves and has now deprived him of 48% of his sales or thereabouts. James Wright, James Francis Wright, formerly of the Supreme Council of Freemasonry, just had a conversation with him before the show today. He is currently holed up in a hotel room. He's been let out of the mental institution where they force drugged him and strapped him to a chair and forced him to watch Sesame Street. I can't really think of any worse form of torture, especially Disney movies with Christina Aguilera in them. Horrible people, really, just demonic. And he's out now. He's on his way to California, and he needs to fill up his car with gas about four more times, which I don't know how much that costs in the United States now with gas prices, probably like $800. So if you are capable of supporting James Wright, getting him to California, his email is jdallastexas@hotmail.com, jaydallastexas@hotmail.com. If you go to PayPal, if you have a PayPal account of some description, just put in that email address, send him some money. And if you can't figure out how to do that, just go to my website, click donate, and send the money to me, and I'll forward it on to James. So far, I've forwarded him about $150-odd of donations from my generous listeners. And thank you so much for supporting him. He's in a real bad way right now. He's been traumatized. He's been screwed over by his family and everything like that. So I really need people to open their hearts and their wallets to support him and get him to California as soon as humanly possible. Now, enough for the housekeeping. Let's go to our very special guest, Luke McKee, who I believe is coming in from Australia. Luke, welcome to the program.
No, I am a refugee from Australia and also New Zealand by extension of the backing of warrants scheme, which allows New Zealand citizens to be arrested for crimes that none of the pollies in the Beehive, which is your parliament, have even dreamed of. They've given, as is what it says, it's a backing of warrant scheme, a blank check to a foreign power to enforce their law on New Zealand citizens. The New South Wales Attorney General's department, sorry, not the federal Attorney General's department, has said in a statement that dual criminality offences are discretionary. So dual criminality means what I said before, being accused, you can be extradited for a crime that doesn't exist in your country. That's what dual criminality is about. And I'm actually somewhere where it's dawn, so that's why the light's off here. It's those who check out your YouTube channel later can see that. So I'm actually in Vietnam.
You're actually in Vietnam?
Correct. I have been away from Australia for 7 years, because I remained overseas because my house was raided by 5 detectives with baseball bat. One had a baseball bat. And, you know, I managed to get the search warrant after that the police said that wasn't even executed. And, well, I got the search warrant, so it was. It accuses me of Australia's rarest crime and first outlaw motorcycle gang law. Someone who the AFP says themselves in the police background check has no criminal record to this day.
Yeah. Well, could you give people just sort of a quick kind of background on who you are sort of thing, just so that we're kind of coming from a proper context here?
Okay. Well, I grew up in the countryside. I went to school at Sydney Grammar with all the elite, which I didn't particularly like very much. I was forced to sing the school song in Latin, Floriat Grammatica Scholar Sydneyensis, or whatever it was. Got a job as an IT guy. Economy went down, dot-com bust. Had to work as a bouncer, working happily with police for 5 years, until one dreaded day where not one, but two homosexual, gay and lesbian liaison officers were called to my house by a gay proxy to assist an illegal immigrant obtain a visa by the only way possible. And that is, if you accuse someone of a crime and you're illegal, I probably shouldn't be giving this advice out, but if you're an illegal immigrant, immigration says get out, guess who can give you a visa? Our friends in the police. All you need to do is accuse someone of a crime. You get a criminal justice bridging visa. Normally that visa, to be fair, ends with deportation, but if you marry someone on that visa, you get to stay. And if you didn't get that visa, your marriage wouldn't let you stay because you were illegal at the time of getting married. So that's the loophole, and that's why I was framed, and I win in court. A magistrate has, which you may be able to play later or may not, depending what if you want to, had ruled that I had done nothing wrong. And then I get a double jeopardy prosecution for the crime of knowing I was discriminated against. The crime of knowing a police officer is in fact gay is the crime of obtaining true personal information on a law enforcement officer. And there has been another case in similar circumstances of that law, 60C Crimes Act, obtained true personal information on a law enforcement officer. So what do you think?
Are you able to play these clips through your Skype, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got it all queued up. I can stop and start it, and we can, you know, if you tell me to stop, I'll press the stop button.
All right. Well, let's proceed with your first clip here. Which is the one you were playing, the one with the judge?
Well, I mean, I wasn't making it up. I'll give you a very simple, clear-cut example of me doing a five-year offence. It's 5 years jail under the 2006 gang laws bill. I wasn't... The offence 60C was 2 years jail. They upped it to five under the 2006 gang laws bill. The United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime says it's a bikie gang law in their UN report, Palermo on the Pacific Rim, transnational organised crime in the Asia-Pacific region, as does the government's own Institute of Criminology. So it is a gang law, and when they introduced it, they said, oh, the dreaded outlaw motorcycle gangs are building intelligence dossiers on police and their families. That's why it can be a crime to know information about police. Now, the police minister said it's not a crime to know a police officer's name in Hansard. So if I name police, I'm under the belief it's not a crime because I went through the proper channels originally. I did an FOI, a Freedom of Information, on the police officer after I got off. That FOI had information which incriminated police, and that's why they raided my house, to try and get that and other information.
Whoa, hold on. Let me get this straight. You filed an FOI, and they said, F you, eh?
I filed an FOI, and one of the officers named in the 60C search warrant, I won't say it just yet, had actually taken a death threat from someone and told me I was sent away for fingerprinting. In the FOI, it said that I didn't want to take the matter any further, and as the show progressed, we'll see that that was what happened. I mean, and only personal information about this one specific of the two officers, the one who wasn't gay, it was in my FOI request. That officer's name is on the 60C search warrant for this gang law that I'm accused of. And that's why I've been exiled 7 years. So just doing an FOI, nothing more, no other contact, nothing, apart from a few faxes to try and get back the letter. I mean, the death threat letter that was needed in another court case. That was it. And you do an FOI, you go to jail for 5 years for obtaining information that incriminates police.
Sounds about right.
So, yeah, this is, out. And the other thing, people don't know the truth about outlaw motorcycle gang laws. Tell me if this sounds... you're from New Zealand, but in Australia and somewhat New Zealand, they are hyping up the Hells Angels and various motorcycle clubs as the, dark riders of the apocalypse, to make people afraid of, we have to give up our civil liberties because the dreaded outlaw motorcycle gangs, we shouldn't allow them to meet each other or anyone else to meet them for that matter because they're domestic terrorists. And this crime of association, you shouldn't call it crime of association. You have a right to associate with anyone you want to. And that's what's in the Victorian Human Rights and Responsibilities Act in Australia and the equivalent in the ACT, where all the politicians live, who are probably listening in, and those federal police. And in order to meet our obligations to the United Nations, and I think New Zealand signed this as well, Australia did in 2004, we signed the United Nations Charter Against Transnational Organised Crime, Article 5, criminalisation of participation in a criminal group. Now, the only states that don't have these gang laws are Victoria, ACT, and the human rights legislation is under threat because we promised UN we'll put the gang laws in which are not compatible with our own human rights laws. And for the American listeners, you have your famous Bill of Rights. Only two states in Australia have something remotely like it, and they're threatened by these gang laws.
Well, I found it very interesting. I've heard a lot of allegations that gangs, not necessarily specifically motorcycle gangs, but criminal gangs, are being used by the police as a proxy for selling drugs for them. So what the police will do is they'll raid one gang headquarters, take all their drugs, and then they'll go to another gang headquarters and sell it to them.
Well, Bob Bob Bottom, funny name, Walkley Award winner, has wrote a book which I've been meaning to read for a long time. I've read some extracts called Fighting Organized Crime. And in that, all the organized crime apparatus, we used to have the NCA in Australia, have been shut down and turned into an informational capacity, whatever the hell that means. And because, you know, Four Corners and all these documentaries were finding out too many stories about police selling drugs. Right now, there is someone in a Thailand jail that would rather stay there than come back to Australia who's involved in the affair with Michael Standen, the second in charge of the New South Wales Crime Commission, who was prosecuted for being a drug seller. And the New South Wales Crime Commission, with him as second in charge, are the people that's getting this law made that I'm accused of.
So now, you know what's interesting? This reminds me of the Chappelle Corby case. You know, she gets found with... Who the frick smuggles kilos of weed in a boogie board bag? Nobody does. But you know, the Australian Federal Police at the time, I think, were being investigated, or they were investigating customs for being part of a massive drug smuggling ring and things like that.
It gets better than that. They knew they were going overseas to a country which would give them the death penalty, and they made sure the Indonesians would pick them up was it the Bali Nine? So, yeah, Federal Police killing Australians. Good job.
Yep. It's just absolutely sickening. And this is what the reality is. I was talking to a couple of people last night at a Paul Connett lecture, right, talking about fluoride or whatever, and afterwards, we talked about some other stuff. You know what I reckon, man? I reckon every single government agency, any single institution, its stated aim and goal is the direct opposite of what its real aim and goal is. So if your police are if it's their job to catch and punish criminals, it's actually their job to commit crimes and get away with it.
Well, I was going to talk about this at the very end of the interview, like what we can do to fix these problems.
We've come to a break, unfortunately.
Okay.
So we'll talk about it.
I'll hold it over.
Yeah. Luke McKee coming at us live. He's literally the biker activist from NAM. We'll be right back at the LinnyEastwoodShow.com.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. This all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm no Superman, but laser beams do shoot out of my eyes if I see David Rockefeller walking around. My very special guest is Luke McKee, who's at the moment literally the activist from NAM. Welcome back.
Yeah, the other point I want to make is I am a Kiwi. I have a Kiwi passport, and there's a video of me burning my Aussie one on YouTube. Just type in burn passport at MB4. So that's the other reason I'm on a New Zealand show. And my surname is very familiar for those people around Taranaki, because it was my grandfather who was the first Kiwi to start looking for oil. But please don't blame my family for, you know, all this coal seam gas crap, which is going to be coming soon.
Yeah. Okay, now, when we went on to break, I made a point that the police kind of commit crimes and cover them up, and that's basically their real intention, and you were about to say something that you thought you might leave till the end of the interview. What was it?
Oh, okay. That thing was, I'm planning to set up an organisation. It will do mass civil disobedience regarding Section 60C. There is a, I believe, after going to all the proper agencies to make a complaint before going public, the Police Integrity Commission, who refused to investigate, no reason given, the Ombudsman, who refused to investigate because they said that I had the matter to take up, I had a chance to take up the matter in court, which had no hearing and investigated nothing. And the Professional Standards Command didn't write a letter, but did send five detectives to my house to seize and destroy evidence. So because of this, the people need to know what to do when they want to complain against police. Now, as I'm such a pariah of the state of New South Wales, and I will demonstrate that in this interview, especially with some of the things I'm going to play, I think people can trust me that I am not, I will never sell them out, and I or other people won't, and I want to build a web of trust using digital cryptography and open source software to allow field agents to gather information on corrupt police and protect whistleblowers, bypass all those corrupt agencies and do what people should do, which is go straight to the Supreme Court, sue the police, get the law changed, do it in front of a jury. And that's exactly what a friend who is known for mutual friends who know my whole saga has done yesterday in the Supreme Court, where he sued the police and won, and he was a man who was not allowed to plead guilty. Not allowed to plead innocent because there was CCTV footage which would exonerate him and incriminate police. And he sued the state of New South Wales and he won. I can't say his name because he won't get the check. So I'm going to play the Channel 7 News, Today Tonight News segment of him now. Let me find it here. There we go. And I blanked out his name. So we can't say his name, but I want him to be your guest in a month from now when he's free to talk.
All right.
A Sydney bouncer is planning to sue police after an 18-month battle to clear his name. He was forcibly arrested and convicted for failing to obey officers, but a court has heard the charges should never have been laid.
It's not easy being a cop on New Year's Eve, dealing with hot, volatile drunks. Problem is, on New Year's Eve 2004...
And I felt in a way that I was violated.
The softly spoken bouncer told police he was trying to get to work at Star City Casino. He asked if he could pass through a cordon at Darling Harbour. Police refused. He argued the point, and before he knew it, he was wrestled to the ground. A 28-year-old was charged with hindering police and failing to leave. He spent 3 hours in a cell.
After Tarek Nasser was convicted, he hired a new lawyer to appeal the decision. But it didn't even get that far. After the public prosecutor saw the evidence, all the charges were dropped and the conviction was overturned.
They've obviously had the opportunity of viewing that footage, comparing it with the statements of their various police witnesses, and they've made a decision.
Police statements claim Tarek tried several times to barge his way through, shoving one of the officers. But you can't see any of that on the security vision. Tarek says the truth has finally come out.
I'm happy that it's come to this stage, but on the same hand, I'm unhappy that it's taken a year and a half just to clear my name.
It cost him more than $7,000 in legal fees. Now he's planning to sue. Marguerite McKinnon, 7 News.
Oops, I just sorry about the first name and that was oversight. I just prepared it quickly. This is a man being pled guilty against his will. The head of the Department of Public Prosecutions, Nicholas Cowberry, was the person who said he shouldn't have even been arrested, let alone convicted. And I can't tell you who the lawyer who did it was, but it was the brother of a very, very famous solicitor in Australia who takes all the terrorism trials. And come out later.
Mm, mm. Well, I think these terrorism laws and things like that, they're all corrupt too. I don't know about you, man. I'm really, really sick of the whole frickin' system, everything, and particularly cops. I'm really sick of cops. I don't know why it is that they're such corrupt, frickin' lying, violent scum. And every single sector that I look into, every single news story that comes out or whatever, I don't see any evidence to the contrary. It's like people get really ticked off that, people discriminate against the cops, people don't trust the cops or whatever. They freaking should discriminate against them. They shouldn't trust them.
Right.
Lying criminals.
I'm coming from a more balanced viewpoint. Because my father's going to come on later and he's going to say how wonderful most of the police are. I believe what the New South Wales Council for Civil Liberties is saying. I don't support them because they won't take my case, like the Greens won't take up the cause, and they both put out press releases against this law. Lee Rhiannon said this law would only ever be used by corrupt police. But when it's being used against someone for the crime of knowing they're being discriminated against by a certain section of the community, which are royalty, because the anti-discrimination laws don't apply to them. The anti-discrimination board, when I tried to complain about my matter there, lodged a complaint on the grounds that I was a man and I was discriminated against by a woman. But in their wisdom, they said, no, we've done our own research. We've found out the officer was actually gay. Does anyone who tells you the sexual preference of a police officer is irrelevant in forms of discrimination is wrong? Because the Anti-Discrimination Board of New South Wales said, no, you're not accepting the complaint the way you lodged it. We believe because the officer is gay and you're heterosexual, you were lawfully discriminated against, like a black in South Africa in the past reading a sign saying, no blacks allowed. You were lawfully discriminated against because the word heterosexual isn't in the Anti-Discrimination Act. And that was a crime against 12 years jail. So hypothetically, in New South Wales, if there was a hate crime, which was very serious, done from someone in the gay lobby, like threatened to rape someone, which has happened to me, had to get me raped in Australia, then you can't complain because they are above the law. And I'm not against gay people. You have the right to be born gay or choose to be gay or whatever. But you don't have the right to... You want to be equal? Well, do you, Spunk? I want you guys or the gay people to be egalitarians like me and support justice. And I was actually interviewed on Sydney's only gay radio show. It was the first person to do a pre-recorded interview with me, or proper interview, was actually a wonderful homosexual man called Stephen Pickels, who did a really, really sick edit. It's on my SoundCloud, of what happened. And... he said, I support your cause against the gay police. So please don't accuse me of being homophobic unless you've got more qualifications than of being gay than Sydney's gay, only gay radio host in 2010, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, again, back on this discussion of police, and you said your father would come on and say that most police are good people and that kind of thing. Here's the problem. I don't think he's talked to most police. and so it'd be difficult to find out. And also the training protocols, they get trained how to lie, okay? And
correct.
So even if somebody is a good person, simply the fact that they are being trained in the police format means that they can't be as good a person as they were.
I actually found something out along those lines. In my case, a police officer broke the LEPRA Act, which is, you know, how you handle someone who's arrested, and didn't allow me to write out a written statement and said, and made false inducements before an interview, which is a crime of, and saying that you have to do a video interview, and that's not the law, and that's in their training, to break the law and push people in front of a camera and try and, you know, catch them up that way. And also I was told I wasn't allowed to have a lawyer, I was of limited financial means then, and I was told I wasn't allowed to get a public lawyer, and that was actually on the police recording, which I hope to play extracts of it later once we've got some more background.
Yeah, that happened to me too. A friend of mine were arrested. We were smoking pot on the top of Mount Eden in Auckland, and the cops, you know, just dumped us in the car, no seatbelts or anything, just rattling around and abusing us, calling us the stupidest stoners ever, denied us access to a lawyer. Here's the word they used, impracticable. Okay, it's impracticable to get you a lawyer. And then I'm just like, well, hold on a second. I had to look up in a dictionary what impracticable means. It means impossible. So it's technically not impossible to get a lawyer at like 9:30 at night, isn't it? There's off-duty mofos, surely. But, you know.
Let's not make allegations. I'm going to play a police officer acknowledging that she did that later. But let's come on. I'm going to give an example of how
you play
can get
it now.
I'll do them one at a time. I'm going to give you an example of me doing an offence that gets 5 years jail, and to prove I'm not paranoid about the police officers all being gay and out to get me in a big gay conspiracy, they were gay. I had a gay neighbour that was arrested for same-sex domestic violence. The police know how to type her name into the system and verify that. And I had two gay officers who sent to my house, and I'll let their own words incriminate them, which will come later. So here's me doing my crime yesterday.
Okay. I'm gonna make. I haven't finished.
Yet. Wrong one. Let me just. Here we go. This one.
One night.
Manly Police, Constable Walk.
Oh hi, I'm trying to speak to your colleague, Miss Tui.
She's not in today, I'm afraid. Can I leave a message for her?
No. I dealt with her once in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll be talking about... she's a gay and lesbian liaison officer, right?
She is, yeah.
Oh, okay. And she is gay, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
That's what I thought. In my case, I don't have a problem with gay people,
mm-hmm.
okay? But I have a problem with gay people not being equal.
Mm-hmm.
And I complained about the misconduct
mm-hmm.
of the... I just found out I had not one, but two gay and lesbian liaison officers sent to my house
mm-hmm.
by a gay neighbour... that if you type her the gay neighbour's name into the system, you'll see...
And so on and so forth. So, you know, and I was discriminated against because the police officer did not want to pick up a CCTV alibi, which would prove that there was, I believe, from what came out in court, 000 calls at the time that the alleged offence was being made, and there was forensic evidence on my computer that it was being used... and I actually got the content from Cache, and it's all dated at the same time I'm allegedly doing assault, and someone's logging into their email and downloading correspondence from Sydney University that was sent to Hong Kong, and this person had told immigration they were at Sydney University and had told their stupid boyfriend, which was me, oh, I don't have to work full-time, I'm waiting for my degree presentation. So we really do have a case of an illegal immigrant getting a visa by the only way possible. And that was the motive for framing me up. Police can actually give visas to undesirables, and that's very scandalous. We have, and then they get, this person relies on a gay neighbour to put two homosexuals in charge of the investigation, the other cop's name I just said, and a gay and lesbian liaison officer who's since been promoted to inspector in the air wing, you know, Kate Howe. And I'm not afraid to name them because you're not meant to do this unless you go through the proper channels, but I did that. And I got a SWAT team. I raided my house when I was overseas, and they saw me off at the airport, and the detective in question swore under oath I was in the country in the search warrant, and then he also swore under oath that my own ex-cop lawyer was a witness against me, and this man has come out and put an affidavit saying the detective is done perjury, and yet they won't even take a complaint from evidence from someone very senior, an ex-cop, accusing a detective of perjury.
You know, that's very interesting. It reminds me of my friend Vince Seamer. The court held a trial in his absence while he was in the United States on business and then convicted him without being able to defend himself and then arrested him as soon as he got off the plane and came home. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, black sunrise.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and scumbaggery, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. A very special guest is Luke McKee, broadcasting live from Vietnam. And you have a clip to play us of the gay guy who was supporting your cause there.
Oh, okay, no problem. I'll just play the beginning of the interview and the other interviews on SoundCloud. Everything I speak of in this show, I will be on the show's chat room afterwards to discuss it, and I will be on your Facebook page afterwards to also answer any questions and also give all the links and documents and facts and figures I speak of. Okay, here we go.
Sure.
Back to the teenage...
Oh, sorry, that's not that one. No, actually, let me see. No, I haven't downloaded it. It's one of the 14 files I don't have ready. So, yeah, it's on SoundCloud. Sorry. What we can play is I've been told that I will be extradited if I go on your show through a third party who knows about my matter from the very beginning, who is my confidant, who's known me for over 10 years, who is a very senior figure in the security industry. I'll leave it at that. And I've edited his voice to make him sound a bit, you know, like deep throat. So we'll play that.
But if you do ever set foot in Australia, he said you will be immediately arrested. He said that straight out.
So the detective who brought you in says I'll be arrested. Yeah. He's not telling you what the warrants are for, but one of them we know is for my coverage of this poor Aboriginal boy. My dad's been told point blank on that one.
Right,
so, but, you know, it's all about Burns. So that they're interested because you know that I was talking about Catherine Burns asking me when I'm leaving the airport, right? I said that, right, in 2007.
And
they know I called you from the airport and said the police are seeing me off and they don't want to check the Police Integrity Commission were told, and, you know, they didn't want to check the CCTV footage from the airport because that would prove the detective did perjury, and they're not in the business of putting corrupt detectives in jail, so what are they in the business for? Screwing police corruption whistleblowers? This is the Police Integrity Commission we're talking about here. So basically, I'm wanted because I prove that the government anti-corruption apparatus is corrupt, and that's the holy grail of all whistleblowers. Do you understand?
This guy is, you know, to be honest, he's not really trying that hard with anything against you because he doesn't like Catherine Burns himself.
So lots of police know what Catherine Burns has been up to, recovering their emails.
All of them know about her, you know one thing or another about her. This guy said to me, about her getting the top job, and he said it just won't happen. He said there's too many of the old-time police that are against her for her to get in.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, they're going to Barry O'Farrell's supporting her, and they suppressed government reports to protect her on her wiretapping affair.
Look, she's been able to slither out of just about everything that she's been accused of.
So they're coming after me, and they're not going to back off.
They won't come after you if you continue on, but if you do...
Don't continue on, they'll come after me. Remember, I'm going to die on my feet rather than die on my knees. I'm that kind of person.
Yeah, well, like, I'm just saying that, you know, if you don't do anything from now on, they're not going to be bothered.
So, there it is. I have called their bluff. Come and get me. Now, the officer named there was head of Professional Standards Command in 2007 when my complaint was lodged. And my recollection is that I spoke to her, and that's what I told everyone in my family and other people around me at that time. And, she's a very senior figure in the police, and she's also involved in the New South Wales Council for Civil Liberties accused the police of a cover-up for not identifying the officers who arrested all these protesters at APEC in 2006 or 7, who were arrested for breaching the special exclusion zone. All these activists had their photos put in their paper, mugshots, like they were criminals, even though they had no criminal record. And, you know, they get cheeky and pissed off, and they have some language, and they have... they start getting all these frothy latte grins sitting just on the edge of the exclusion zone in Hyde Park, and they're unlawfully arrested, filmed by all the world media. And the head of the professional standards decided, and the journalist I spoke to has his own reservations. The officer who decided had their name blanked out in the FOI. But if you're giving the professional standards decide, we don't need to identify all the police who did wrongful arrest because a cash payout was made to the agreed parties. And the man I mentioned earlier, he got the same offer. It's suppress, suppress, suppress. They'll do anything. They'll pay money to suppress their crimes being exposed because it may be cheaper in the scheme of things rather than retraining the officers who will be replaced, to replace them, I mean. But this is what happens. And this is how the anti-corruption agencies work. They don't do their job, and there needs to be non-government organisations to take the role of investigating police away from police, because the great Police Integrity Commission, made after the Wood Royal Commission, does not work, does not do their job. And I want to say, before this whole 60C thing started, I did mention the saga started in 2004 when Topher Field interviewed me and my father. It's an interesting podcast. I didn't explain what started in 2004 then. I found out how police-owned security companies were taking a cut of poker machine revenue using a loophole in the Registered Clubs Act. I can talk about that at a later time, but, I was already a Police Integrity Commission corruption informant on the record before the 60C thing ever happened.
Now, and I also find
complaint.
I find it very ironic, you know, I don't think police and integrity belongs in the same sentence, but in New Zealand we have a police complaints authority which is staffed by police. So police are supposed to investigate themselves when the police openly call themselves the biggest gang in New Zealand, right? So it's like going to a mafia don and saying, hey, look, Mr. Don, I'm really upset that one of your boys has killed my wife. And the mafia guy goes, don't worry about it, forget about it. I'll take care of him. And then all of a sudden nothing happens. And you wonder why. It's because they're both part of the frickin' mafia and you're not.
Okay, so where do we go from here? Do you want to stay on my case, or do you want to talk about some other cases of this same law being misused? Since I was on Topher's show, I found one other case of Section 60C Crimes Act being used. Now, I'm going to reiterate it here. It was made to stop the dreaded bikie gangs that are, you know, we have to give up all our rights for. And it's just been used. Now, to prove that 60C is being used by professional standards against people, just the other day we found someone who's paying money, at least $100, to use justanswer.com. I'll put all the links up later, to get a fellow police officer arrested for the horrendous crime of subscribing them to some junk mail from a adjustable beds company, Craftmatic, some algae pills and a few things like that. And oh my God, they got some junk mail. So they mentioned a previous section of the Crimes Act, 60 brackets, one of the Crimes Act that they were trained on in 2000 and earlier, before 2002, which is a crime of assaulting police. And this is the predecessor to 60C that was destroyed in the Supreme Court in the case of Mellor versus Lowe. And for me to read that court transcript, it would involve lots of swearing. But if you do ask, I can do it. When a believed to be an Aboriginal man from Redfern was charged with intimidating police And the magistrate said, well, you police officers, you're all carrying Glock 22 semi-automatic pistols, or maybe back then Smith & Wessons. And an Aboriginal man, how can you all be afraid of a shirtless Aboriginal man? And, you know, the definition of what is an assault on a police officer was redefined in that case. And the Department of... The government lawyers that represented them even bragged about it on the LawLink website. So I put those links up. That's one of the earliest cases of something like 60C. And then you've got police officer gets some junk mail. The other officer has to get 5 years jail for that practical joke. So the other thing is, if they didn't have the Cronulla riots in Australia in 2006, this whole matter would have blown over. And if Catherine Burns had given me a letter saying I'm not wanted anymore, or any other police officer, 5 or 6 years ago, then I wouldn't be on your radio show. I would have gone on with my life, done something productive, made some money. But for the last 7 years of my life, I have been a refugee. My name is on UNHCR letterhead as a refugee. That was hard to get, mind you. And I was embedded with all the refugees in Hong Kong for a period. And you've got refugees being put in jail, general population, without trial for 20 years. That's Asia's Gitmo. And the UNHCR accepted that I was a refugee from New Zealand, because even though I've only spent 2 weeks of my adult life there, and I've got no... So, you know, because Australia and New Zealand are joined together as a precursor to the Asia-Pacific Union, and on nationalsecurity.gov.au, they asked the question to all the lawyers, do you want to add any more countries to this backing of Warren scheme? And the Public Information Law Clearinghouse in Victoria, also won't support my cause, is saying that, yeah, we can't have more countries because we don't want to follow their laws, you know. So, and there's no protections from this dual criminality. So a foreign power, basically, even you, Vinny, if the police said just playing a police officer's name or even saying a police officer's name is obtaining personal information, you could be extradited from New Zealand to Australia for a crime that no one in the Beehive made. This is wrong.
We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody snapped up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb on behalf of the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for Merrill Lynch as a foreign derivatives trader, to help the economy. My very special guests...
plural,
is Luke McKee and his father, Jeff McKee. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Can you hear me?
Can hear you just fine. You've come on for the second hour to sort of support what Luke has been saying. I was wondering if you'd be able to give us a sort of a brief summary of how you feel this whole situation is arising.
Okay, Vinny, I've listened to some of your other shows, and I think you're a very good interviewer. You know, you listen, and I think you've got a lot of empathy. So you've asked me now how I feel, have you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, look, the listeners might be saying, well, who the hell is this guy, Luke McKee? Is he crazy trying to take on the police? Just a one man with an internet modem. I mean, being a father of Luke has been caused huge anxiety. Can you understand that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've learnt a lot through Luke's continuing to engage with Luke while he's in exile overseas. You know, he's asked me to attend this court case and that court case. And through those experiences of me, you know, listening to these problematic court cases, I have actually come to realise that what he's on about actually is true and exists. The terrible impact on poor individuals who find themselves a victim of basically lies on a police fact sheet. I mean, the and so I've got this theory that that lying is actually the root of all evil, and to connect, you know, the father of all lies, of course, is all flows out of, in my research, this is another whole story, but it all flows out of 9/11, which is like, you know, the manufacturing of reality, and the only way to deal with it is to be ignorant about what went on. And this is what I think on your show you talk about people being either awake or asleep, do you?
Indeed.
Yeah, well, have you ever heard the expression ignorance is bliss?
I have. And I found it's that phrase, ignorance of bliss, reminds me of the Ayn Rand quote where she says, you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
Right. Now, what I want to do is I'm not going to go into Luke's narrative now. That's his trip due to his traumatic experience of all starting in 2007 when he experienced what it's like to be on the end of a false fact sheet where there are deliberate lies on a fact sheet in order to convict some poor bastard for something he didn't do. I mean, this is a terrible crime. And he told me to go to a court case yesterday. I sat through it. I saw a poor constable in the dock for 3 hours for basically fabricating a fact sheet. And to be honest, I had a bit of empathy for that constable. For 2 or 3 hours, he had to sit there perjuring himself, and it was quite obvious to the judge because he couldn't undo the lie that he'd already done in order to falsely convict some poor bastard. Okay? Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay, now...
May I interject? Would you like to...
No, sorry. Hurry, Luke. I'm talking about... Vinny is interviewing me here, and this is the father's perspective. Now, regarding ignorance is bliss, I want to explain, I think Luke has a lot of anger in him, and I've been, as a father, I've been trying to encourage him to get rid of this anger in more constructive ways, because there's nothing good comes out of hate and revenge. Would you agree with that, Vinny?
It's funny you should mention that. I had a conversation with a friend about that this morning before coming on the show, that hate's baggage, really.
Yeah,
and
yeah, Now, what you notice, I'm pleased with Luke. I don't mind Luke. He's evolved now after 5 years of anger. I think the hatred and revenge is dissipating, and now he's becoming more of an activist, which is quite legitimate. And so he's got a political objective now, which is to overturn a bad law that he was pinged by, you see. Now, that's perfectly legitimate, and it's in the realm of rational activism, but not in the world of personal revenge, because it gets you nowhere. Now, getting back to my ignorance is bliss, I want to explain that when he was traumatized in 2007 with this terrible experience of being arrested and falsely charged and dragged through the courts, and then his anger after that led him to, instead of moving on, he was so angry he wanted to kind of get revenge, and he tried to complain to all these authorities about an injustice. And I'm going to say something here. It's been how many years? At that time in 2007, our whole family was traumatised, suffering huge grief and confusion because Luke's younger brother, my son, disappeared on the 13th of November 2006, and his body wasn't found for 69 days. And he'd spent a whole year studying 9/11 and peak oil, and he had this guru. Have you heard of Michael Rupert?
Yep, he was actually the first documentary I ever saw that kind of woke me up to the truth was by Michael Rupert called The Truth and Lies of 9/11.
Yeah, well, he ordered that book into the Sydney University Library. It was called Crossing the Rubicon. It was all about 9/11 and peak oil, and I think Michael Rupert became his guru, if you like. And I wasn't aware he was reading it, but records show he renewed the book three times. And I noticed once he was reading it on his bed, and it was almost like a Bible. That was a 19-year-old kid who's very, very bright, with a sense of humour, a student of history, a top history student, discovering for the first time how the world works, and I think it was just too much for his brain. And after a year of this, he made a decision. The way to solve that there was no future anywhere in this. He called it a nonsense suicide civilization. You know, he was so. Can you imagine somebody being so disillusioned and so alienated from the world that they would just want to go and end it all? Can you imagine that?
I see it happen more often than I'd like.
Okay, now
the people in this movement.
This is getting back to my ignorance is bliss. Now, my youngest son knew too much, right? He was like Luke. He just spent a whole year. It was all about Iraq, the war on terror, 9/11, and he had, at 19-year-old, he had this this guru, Michael Rupert. Now, am I leading this interview in the wrong direction?
Well, I'd like you to kind of finish this. Maybe just a little, because this isn't just me interviewing you. Okay. This is sort of all three of us participating in sort of a conversation about what we're feeling and what we're doing and that kind of thing, you know.
Okay.
Like very free flow. Yeah.
What I'm leading to is the fact that when Luke was arrested, he was still suffering enormous anger and confusion and grief over the loss of his younger brother, right? And I think that he was so angry then that it led him to do extreme things as a way of, you know, this built up anger inside. So he's been taking it out on seeking justice, you know, and he hasn't let go of this in 5 years. But I'm quite happy now that he seems to be. You know, he seems to be evolved to a new stage now, but it's causing a lot of problems in the family, in that my wife and my daughter are really unhappy that I should ever come on the show or do anything to encourage Luke's behaviour, because there's all this fear, you see, and their attitude is you never get involved in these things because there's this innate fear of the powers that be.
Well, there's an old quote, I think it might have been from Jefferson, when the people fear the government, there is tyranny, and when the government fears the people, there is freedom.
That's
and
right.
That's what I want to do. I want to make later for the Citizens Ombudsman's Organisation project, I want to make police fearful of the man on the grassy knoll that's watching them, investigating them, that's preparing a case to slam them in the Supreme Court when they're up on the stand and there's nothing they can do. And I want to let everyone participate and have a chance to upset this balance of power.
Mm. Now, with activism, what I've found is it starts often as a personal vendetta, and then the realization dawns on the activist that I'm not the only person who this has happened to. And more to the point, that there's a flare of altruism that comes out. I don't want this kind of thing that's happened to me to happen to anybody else. And unfortunately, nobody else is trying to solve this problem, so the responsibility comes to me. traditionally throughout history, it's been individuals that have solved major societal problems, not the masses.
Okay, well, can I just say something there? Yeah, I think you are so right that I think Luke is starting to get some empathy because initially it was all him being a victim, but what he's doing now, he's pointed me to other people who have become victims of, you know, of false fact sheets. And so I think there is enormous empathy for these people who have ended up traumatised, just as he was. And so empathy is always good. Now, this is going to lead me to my what I want to tell you is, to say the police are this or the police is that is really black and white thinking. Now, what I want to say is that I'm holding a book in my hand. It's called Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. Now, people get afraid of the term psychopath, but I've studied it for a few years, and all it is a person just like you or me or Luke, but you know, very, very intelligent, skilled, but without a conscience. Can you understand that?
I've studied psychopathy extensively. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. Where I'm leading at is that if you get a binomial distribution of humans, both inside the police force and outside the police force, you know, there will probably be statistics showing about 1 in 20 would be without a conscience, okay? But the person without a conscience can be very, very intelligent, be very manipulative, and they could do very well within the organisation. And that's what I'm saying about the police, is that Luke is going on about police that don't have a conscience. They're prepared to punish somebody unjustly and put their arms in the stern just because they enjoy it. You know, it's like
every officer in my case was promoted, including Detective Sergeant Michael O'Keefe, who wrote the 60C search warrant, now investigates deaths in custody. Okay. So if I go back to Australia,
so what I'm trying to say is that Luke has experienced being treated by police who are psychopaths. It sounds pretty serious, but I'm saying they don't have a conscience. Okay, now...
Can I interject here? Because what happens with psychopathy, and the American Medical Journal has stated that psychopaths are generally smiling people who are very enchanting but don't have a whole lot of long-lasting relationships in their lives, and that the three most likely industries you are to find psychopaths are politics, business, and entertainment industries. Now, also there's a documentary called I Am Fishhead. It comes from the old Chinese proverb that says a fish rots from the head. And what it was detailing was psychopaths in the banking industry. And one part of what you said kind of stuck out at me that comes from that documentary is that, let's say there's three people up for promotion, three people who are really good at their job, and one of them's a psychopath. What that one psychopath will do is he will sabotage those other two people to the point where they won't want to work for that organization anymore. So they quit, and the psychopath gets himself in the top position. And this is what happens, I believe, in many, many organizations, including the police, where good people choose to leave and the psychopaths choose to stay and get promoted because they destroy the reputations of the other good people around them in order to advance themselves through scumbaggery. And my friend Grace Hayden, who's a 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand police, said that the New Zealand police are so corrupt that you either become corrupt or you leave. She left.
Yeah, well, look, you are touching here on basically a theory of how human societies evolve, and I've come to accept this theory because it makes more sense to me to see that governments and people in power can actually be very, very clever people, highly intelligent, good communication skills, highly manipulative, but without a conscience. Now, people will be shocked to hear me say, or they won't be shocked to hear me say that, say, Hitler was a psychopath because he had no conscience, but he was a brilliant orator, right? Now, what I'm saying is that this is very extreme, but I can look at Obama, for example, and he could very well be a psychopath because his behaviour and some of the laws he's signing, using drones to execute innocent people, and, you know, that's what psychopathy is. So my theory is that within the police, maybe 1 in 20 is... doesn't have a conscience, but you can't generalise. My experience is that 95% are wonderful people. Does that make sense?
It does. Hold on a second. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff and Luke McKee are my guests on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Back in a tick.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. When along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. And I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that goes everywhere that people fear to tread. Because in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. My very special guests are Luke and his father, Jeff McKee. Now, you had a clip of an ABC broadcaster or something of that nature that you wish to play and preface?
Oh, and what it's all about, yes. Just to let your listeners know what we're talking about, just tuned in, we're talking about a thought crime of putting information in your noggin, which incriminates police, that the police minister said was set up as a preventative framework to prevent harm happening to officers in the future when he introduced it. So it's Minority Report, Meet 1984 by George Orwell. What happened is my dad was talking about other cases I've been involved in, also around 60C. There's one case we haven't mentioned out of the three I know of the possible... there was only two cases before me down in Milton, and, you know, two convictions, 100% conviction rate, no case law, secret matter. But ABC News, the police decided to break tradition with 60C, being a secret whistleblower execution framework kill switch law, and put a press release out saying, and I'll put the links up very at the end of the show, that an Aboriginal boy, a youth had done, made a statement, was the police's words, on a social networking site at this time to the exact minute. And he's going to court on this date. ABC News named the page, okay, he made the statement on, and made the false claim he created the page, even though it never came out in court. And we actually believe the police created the page themselves for entrapment purposes. That's my opinion. So they made the false claim without using the word allegedly. And then they get a man who was on the AIDS Council of South Australia. So you have to be a precursor for that job is being gay, who's a former ABC producer, come online, he's an IT commentator by the name of Stilgarian, who's busy on ZDNet plugging geoengineering, and they don't talk about everything we're talking about, the truth, what we're doing now, revolutionary act. They say that the boy's an idiot, and how disgusting it is, and he says something very interesting about Facebook. I won't spoil the surprise. So I'm going to play these two little clips now. Here we go.
Back to the teenagers and whoever's behind these silly sites in Port Macquarie, the Rootability site in particular.
Mm.
Oh, I don't know. Teenagers have always had a tendency to do some pretty stupid things, but I've become one of those people. We didn't have the capacity to disseminate information in the same way that we do now. We might have scrawled some nasty words on the back of the toilet door at school or gossiped around the quadrangle at lunch, but it didn't really go any further than that.
That's right. And the other factor is that once something is online, it's there permanently, it's searchable, and it's very difficult you know, to make it go away and to cover it up. And this is going to be a challenge for kids growing up because they're going to do normal teenage stuff. And, you know, there's no way we can stop that. Kids will do reckless things. That's what kids do. It's just that once it gets to 20, 30 years down the track, someone's going to drag that up again, and it'll be an embarrassment. I'm wondering, and this is just perhaps more of a hope than a wondering, that, you know, after an initial few years of shock, horror, look at the terrible things these kids are doing, or someone runs for public office, wants to become, you know, mayor of the local town, and then can't because someone digs out a Facebook post from when they were 17 to embarrass them. That will happen, but I'm wondering whether in a couple of decades we might not be quite so judgmental of people, that because our childhood foibles are exposed to the world, and everybody has them, that we'll become a bit more laid back about them.
Still Gear in with us on ABC Mid-North Coast. He's an internet commentator. We're talking about Facebook. We were having a chat about this at the station, and the question I posed to my colleagues was, what would have happened if some of the key figures in our recent history had access to social media and social networking? And I used Hitler as the example. Imagine if Hitler had used Facebook and Twitter.
God. Totally off topic they are, and then it gets even more strange.
That would have to be the ultimate marketing list, wouldn't it?
Oh, it is absolutely incredible, because you can tell so much about someone just through who their friends are. Mm-hmm. And the classic example of that is someone has already done analysis of Facebook friend networks and worked out who's gay or not purely on the basis of who they're friends with and what interests they show, often before that person themselves has figured out that they're gay.
For those who detest social networking, is it avoidable or is it inevitable?
It's inevitable. I mean, it's...
Okay, so what actually happened is an Aboriginal boy, and this is all
Hold on. Before you continue, I just want to counteract your point. What if Hitler had access to social networking? Okay, Hitler took a census so that he knew the religion and the nationality and the job and the number of people and everything of everywhere. Hitler had state TV and radio broadcasting him all day, every day, practically. Hitler had censors to make sure any other broadcaster wasn't able to say a bad word against him. And you're afraid that he'll somehow have an unfair advantage if he has Twitter or Facebook.
I know, it's crazy. And speaking of it, the government does have an advantage because people in Australia might know of the OneTel collapse of a phone company. And Jody Rich from that's moved on just to get into big data mining from Facebook. He's got the Twitter feed as well. So the governments are actually watching what we all do collectively, and they all get the big Facebook and Twitter feed, and they already know what's going on. So they don't really need to, you know, go on the social networking sites themselves. They know what everyone else is saying about them. It's a new form of polling. But anyway, let's say what actually happened. And this is all government sources I'm about to say. If you don't believe what I'm saying, you're a conspiracy theorist, because you should believe what the government tells you. So ABC News named the Facebook page, the police at the time of the statement, and Google Corporation, which we can say is a government entity practically, saved a cache copy of the page, which I'll put online on Alex Jones's InfoWars forums back in the day. And he made a one-line comment. He called a police officer. Can I say the word? Three-letter word? Starting with F means gay. Okay? And he called a detective, Blake Keating, a F-A-G. And then the Aboriginal boy was charged with obtaining true personal information on a law enforcement officer. Now, what happened is the police tried to spin it in the court case because the boy pled not guilty. Now, I have another tape of a police officer in that police station saying that the boy confessed to this horrendous crime, and I'm going to talk more after this.
Okay, I haven't finished.
You're still not getting straight with
I'm going to have, before the court date, I'm going to have every Aboriginal group in Australia trying to get this law repealed. I don't care.
Bruce,
you're not going to win against me. Do you understand?
I'm fighting you. We're not accused. This young person has profusely apologised for making a mistake.
So you're saying Benji was charged?
Sorry?
Are you saying Benji Morris was charged?
Who?
You're saying that the young boy was charged?
Yeah.
Benji Morris was charged.
As you're aware, the young fellow was charged and he's admitted to it and apologised profusely directly to the officer involved. He's apologised for making a mistake.
Are you going to prosecute him for this, even though he's allegedly apologised?
Yes, he's going through the court system. Okay, he's going through the court system. It is up to the court to decide his penalties.
Is the police officer gay? Must the police officer be gay for your charge to stick? Do you understand crime of obtaining true information? Is the detective gay or have you charged him incorrectly? Answer the question.
I did not understand the question. What was the question?
Please? Is Detective Blake Keating gay? Is the detective gay because the personal information... You don't get 5 years jail for obtaining false personal information. The basis of the charge is you allege...
You've changed your tack now, have you?
Who cares of what you think he's apologised for? Has he obtained true personal information? Is it true that the detective is gay? The detective Blake Keating is gay.
Look, what are the proofs of the offence?
Based on the 60C Crimes Act, is the crime of obtaining true personal information, is the detective gay?
You give me what are the proofs of the offence?
What?
What are the proofs of the offence? You look up the Crimes Act and you get back to me with the proofs of the offence before you talk to us any further.
I do have proof of the offence. Google case a copy of it.
All right, well, you tell me what are the proofs of the offence?
Why don't you go look at the current version of the page?
No, you're wrong. You tell me the proofs of the offence. You get back to me and you tell me the proofs before you go.
You keep ranting all you want, but the pain hasn't even been turned on yet. I've only been at you for a couple of days, but by the end of a couple of weeks, you'll be wishing. I mean, ASIO aren't going to stop me. You'll be praying for ASIO to hunt me down and kill me, basically, by the time I'm
finished. I'm starting to wonder if you just want a date with him.
You must say, I want a date. Is that the best you've got? You've got to call me gay. I'm married in a foreign country and I'm a resident. You can't cancel my visa. You can't do shits to me. I've got friends. I'm playing that interview to my good friends in Interpol. Okay, I've got a date with them on Monday, actually. Yeah, Interpol. They're in Sordaimund, mate. Yeah. Hey, do you want to see me? I had a meeting with them in 2008. And there's a record of my meeting complaining against 60C
Luke,
Crimes Act.
Luke, what are the proofs
of government agents?
You're going to do your homework for me. You look up the proofs of the offence for Section 60C, mate, and you get back to me and then...
I've had Barrett legal advice...
Yeah, I'll stop it there. But the proof of the offence, basically they're saying obtain personal information on a law enforcement officer for purposes of harassment. But when the law was introduced, everyone, including the police, the current police minister, who was then leader of the opposition, Michael Gallagher, and the police minister introduced it, Michael Costa, back then, said obtaining a police officer's name is not an offence, and they laughed at Lee Rhiannon when she predicted this law would be misused. Now, I did say Lee Rhiannon put a press release out against the law, but the Greens have dropped their own social justice and human rights agenda against this obscene law because, I guess, authoritarian gays with guns, it's a hate crime to know you've been discriminated against, are more important. And Lee Rhiannon was the one who tried to push through the gay marriage laws in New South Wales, so case in point. So I'm not against gay people. I'm against, you know, them not being equal. Now, what do you think of all that? This boy... was found not guilty in court. My dad's going to give the coverage of what he actually saw happen in the courtroom because he was in Australia. But the police officer was not gay and had charged a teenager with the crime of knowing he was. So the magistrate, when dealing with the boy pleading not guilty and with decent legal counsel, the magistrate goes, oh, my God, the boy's going to ask the police officer what his sexuality was. So he tries to reframe it and say, no, you didn't obtain... You weren't charged with 60C because he couldn't say obtaining a name. He couldn't say gay because the officer wasn't gay. So he said, you were charged with Section 60C Crimes Act, but the offending language you used was the word especially in your Facebook one-line comment linking to the title of the Facebook group, All Port Macquarie Police Are Corrupt. So Magistrate Hoxton in Port Macquarie said it's a crime to know through personal information, a law enforcement officer is corrupt. It's a crime, and that's exactly what the Greens predicted, and they're still not doing anything.
That's very interesting. So literally, it's a crime to know that law enforcers are criminals.
That's and what to the have magistrate evidence said. That's where the law has to go. Just like its predecessor, 60 brackets, one of the Crimes Act. And that's what the cop mentioned when she was trying to go for a fellow colleague. The guy's name's David, and he's in professional standards. That's all I know from that Just Answer thing, overgoing a fellow cop over junk mail, you know?
This reminds me of a story my brother told me. They got pulled over one time, and his mate was really drunk in the passenger seat. And the cop was kind of, like, giving them a bit of grief and whatnot. And the drunk guy goes, "Excuse me, Mr. Officer, what would you do if I said that you were an asshole?" And he said, "Well, I'd have to arrest you because, you know, you're going to insult an officer." And he says, "Okay, well, what if I just thought that you were an asshole?" And the cop says to him, "Well, I guess everybody's entitled to their own thoughts, you know?" And he says, "Okay, well, in that case, I think that you're an asshole."
Oh, God. So, my dad went there, and also it's a crime to be a journalist. My dad's also going to expose it's a crime to be a journalist sitting in a courtroom with a 2B pencil. So every time you see someone sketch from the courtroom on the news, that's police-approved artwork from someone with a press pass. Any member of the public who goes to a courtroom with a 2B pencil will be arrested, and my dad will talk about it soon.
See, it's like turning every courtroom into a Shakespearean play. To be or not to be? That is the question. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Bonkers.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment that we've got here with Jeff and Luke McKee. And we've got a lot to cram into this segment, so let's not waste any time. Jeff was mentioning to me over the break, if only his youngest son had been alive to this day and not gone through all that trauma and maybe been able to get over it, it would have been a hell of a lot better for everybody involved, really. And also we were talking over the break about how the likelihood of Luke getting on any mainstream media is freaking nil, right? It's because they're not interested in the truth. And I don't know about how the audience interprets this, but I interpret truth as a drug. Okay, and I need more and more and more. And for each bit of truth that I get, for each more knowledge that I obtain, I become immune to it. And I need even bigger and harder doses of truth in order to get my kick out of it, essentially. That is why I don't really have much fear anymore. That is why I'm not really concerned about talking about the massive pedophile rings in the in our countries or the corruption in the police or anything like that. I'm on a drug. It's called truth. Okay.
Can I just butt in here, Vinny?
Sure.
Because we're talking about the broader philosophical issues about truth. And, you know, I've always considered myself a rational person. I'm 67. I've been an engineer all my life. Engineers learn not to be conspiracy theorists. We don't jump to conclusions. We have to analyze problems in a rational manner. But do you realize that I, as a person, am stupid and wrong? And also, Luke is stupid and wrong, and you are stupid and wrong. And this comes from the mouth of the Prime Minister of Australia, who, in Parliament, in response to a union official who, shock horror, came out in public and said that the official story of that world-changing event on 9/11 does not stand up to scientific scrutiny. And just for him saying that, just for him actually suggesting that the story doesn't stand up, she got up in Parliament and she had to show which, and she said, that man is stupid and wrong, you see. Now, how do I interpret that? What she's saying to me, that I am stupid and wrong, because I am an engineer, and also I'm a member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and so the truth is very... And so most people who are asleep, they listen to our Prime Minister and they say, oh, yes, well, anybody like me is stupid and wrong. Let's go back to sleep. And they don't have time to research the issue. So here we have reality being manufactured from the highest levels for people who are asleep. And so that is why this quotation, I'd just like to sign off now on a philosophical level, this quotation about ignorance is bliss, there is a paradox there, and it touches on your, you were saying that your radio station goes to where nobody, where people fear to tread, is that right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why people, I can't talk to anybody about 9/11, they just freeze as though there's some kind of fear associated with even talking about it. And this is from this paradox that ignorance is bliss. You know, it's very blissful to be asleep. You can get on with your life and you don't know about the dark side of how the world is run geopolitically. And so I'll just sign off by the last lines of this poem by Thomas Gray, 18th century poet who... when I researched the idea of ignorance as bliss, it was traced back to this poem by Thomas Gray, and he said, since sorrow never comes too late and happiness too swiftly flies, thought would destroy their paradise no more. Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise. So what he's saying is, you know, if you... do a lot of research and find the unpleasant truth of how society is run, then it's going to be foolish if you want to be happy.
Well, yeah, I don't want to be happy. I want to be free. Okay, so Luke we've got a very short time frame here. We've only got about 6 minutes to finish.
I'm quickly going to play. Give Dad another chance to talk about what happened in Port Macquarie. I did ask the police officer himself, who featured on Channel 10's The Recruits TV show, Detective Blake Keating, if he was gay, and he wasn't prepared to admit he did the false charge and say he wasn't. So here's this.
Paul Corey Tag, Blake Keating.
Oh, hi, Blake. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Based on the fact you've charged Benji with 60C, you must actually be gay because you've accused him of the crime of obtaining true personal information?
And that was it. So, this is a real case. It went on. And it's disgusting that the mainstream media won't talk about the truth of the country's first anti-white supremacist motorcycle gang law being used against an Aboriginal teenager. And everyone says, why am I getting involved in this boy's case? If I can get one of the two wonderful Aboriginal legal activists I know out there that's saying who really owns Australia and talk about sovereignty, to take this boy's case, 60C is defeated, and that's an actual avenue that your listeners can do to connect with the Indigenous Australians who, had the country before us, you know, no terra nullius, and beg them to stop. Now, the amnesty won't help us because the leader of the Amnesty International is in New South Wales, is Senthilan Raj, who runs the gay and lesbian rights lobby, whose greatest achievement is getting gays with guns must investigate a heterosexual if homosexuals point the finger. And that's injustice as bad as having all white juries, in my opinion. So, people can get involved, and this law has to go. My case, other cases of 60C, it's a gang law that gets used against anything but gangs, and that's what all the motorcycle gangs were saying. These gang laws can be used against you people, not just the dreaded Hells Angels, not just some other group. It's being used against us here and now. And I don't like some of the bikies myself. The only place I ever rode was in the country I'm in now, and they wouldn't really call it a Harley or anything. So, I want listeners to say these thought crime laws have got to go, and the best way to take them out is in Supreme Court prosecutions. Now, I feel disappointed that there's not enough time to play audio of, you know, judges exonerating me and, you know, Catherine Burns' involvement. And what else have I got here? I wonder if I can take us out with something. Oh, how about the little bit from the court case where the police actually admit there was triple O calls made. And that they were suppressed from the fact sheet because it matched up my alibi. I'm a victim of a goal-seek prosecution. My audio interview matches nothing to the fact sheet. And then when I do the police FOI, it tells me that they didn't even interview the person who did malicious property damage at my place. When I'm accusing them of a crime and the police won't even do anything, there's damage being done, a door's been broken by an illegal immigrant trying to frame me up who solicited sex in the morning I was framed, and if I said yes, she would have got a rape visa. And that came out in the interview. I haven't changed my story since the very beginning, and I'm not... I've done no act of domestic violence. The judge has said it, and I win in court. It's over, and because I was so wronged and because of family, both I lost all my super, my dad had to pay legal fees, I wanted to take it further to get justice. After the illegal immigrant got deported, the gay neighbour got arrested for same-sex domestic violence, I go after police, and that's the crime. So the main culprits here are the police who persecute people who know their crimes. It's happening everywhere, and we have to get all get together and do something to stop this going on.
All right. We've only got 2 minutes left in the broadcast. Are you able to squeeze that clip in there, or is it too long?
It's a bit too long, but I'll try and jump around. Let's see how we go. All right.
To November, yes. When you say that she threw the rock and broke two windows.
That's correct.
I take it that you reported that action to the police?
Well, Ms. Frim has a visa status of a foreign student. If I were to do that, it would be a vindictive act. She wouldn't be able to pick up her degree, and she had no private transport to flee the scene. And technically, it's domestic violence to threaten someone's visa status. And I thought that that would be too hard a measure on her. So I did not call the police, but I threatened I would call the police, and that's what made her leave the scene when she was crying outside.
But you subsequently
go. I threatened to call the police.
No, you didn't.
I threatened to call the police to her to make her leave.
All right, hold on. Luke, we can't hear you. Your mic's been muted, it looks like.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, so... Yeah,
I'm afraid that's really all we've got time for. We've only got about maybe 45 seconds. Do you have a website or something of that nature where people can go to look upon your information, hear these recordings, that kind of thing, a YouTube channel, anything like that?
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel plugged on your page, which I'll be making more use of. I will disable this Twitter account once the anti-discrimination laws are made equal and once... at least gay and lesbian liaison officers are required not to be in charge of investigating heterosexuals. Gays above the law on Twitter. And I'm launching a website next week called citizensombudsman.org. And on the local government issue that you've had on your show, Max Egan, I've obtained the list of every government official in New South Wales. tinyurl.com/Strathfield. I know where every government official lives. How's that for obtaining personal information?
That sounds very nice. And what was your YouTube channel called again?
It means Aussie Luke in Korean, or Hojuruku. Hojuruku.
Okay, Hojuruku. That's fantastic. All right. Jeff, thank you very much for coming on and supporting your boy. And also, I'm glad to actually talk with somebody who's an actual engineer from Architects and 911 Truth for a change. And Luke as well, thank you very much for all the work you're doing. And, you know, I wish that the world was a different place and we didn't have to run away from the scum who are powerful and dangerous, and I wish we could beat them and stand where we can. But unfortunately, the world's not a happy place. We'll be right back.